I'd like to call the Transportation Finance Division to order. Do we have a quorum? We don't have a quorum at this point. We do have a quorum, so, Representative Doty, have you taken a look at the minutes? Would you approve the minutes, please?
I have, Mr. Chair. I moved the minutes to the previous meeting.
Any questions on the minutes? For the, we have two meetings, the 6th and the 7th. I just have one. Representative Doty?
Now I have seen both the 6th and the 7th. I moved both.
The minutes have been moved. Any questions? If not, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? Minutes are approved. The first bill up today is House File 2408. You got, that's the subcommittee report. Representative Boynton, you want to do the subcommittee report?
I'd move the subcommittee report, Mr. Chair.
Subcommittee report's been moved. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? Subcommittee report adopted. First bill up is... We'll be holding that bill over for possible inclusion in the omnibus policy bill. Someone here to testify in House File 2408? Oh, that's right. We're holding that one over. Okay, that's right. House File 2600, Representative Kelleher? Oh. Welcome to the committee, Representative Kelleher.
Or committee members.
Was someone new for two?
I'll move the House File 2600.
He referred to local government. He referred to local government.
Refer it to local government.
Okay.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We're here today, and I have a constituent with me who's here to testify, and I'm going to let Mr. Binding actually do most of the talking, and I'll have him sign in while I introduce the bill to you. So this bill deals with the issue of engine braking, and I know that many of you have heard this, literally heard these noises, but this is a particular situation along Highway 394. Interestingly enough, I live on one side of Highway 394, which is protected by a sound wall. That side is the north side of the highway, and that was part of a settlement agreement with the Department of Transportation around noise mitigation. There are sound walls on the south side as well of the highway, but the issue is the geography that we deal with is quite different. I live in a very low area. The sound wall protects the neighborhood from most of this noise. And, Mr. Chairman, it is a little noisy in your room right now, so I'm hoping that members will...
Could you please quiet the room or take your seats in the back or outside?
Thank you. And what happens is that when the traffic is moving extremely slow, there's no problem on 394 because things are just sort of crawling along. When there's extreme movement of traffic, it's usually not a problem either. But at the time period of about 3 a.m. To 5 a.m., and then in the mid-afternoon, there becomes this period where the engine braking, because of the slowdown in traffic, becomes problematic. And so I'm going to let Mr. Binding identify himself for the record and tell you a little bit about the situation with the geography of this particular area and why this bill is needed to allow the signage to be posted.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I'm Ron Binding, and I live at 1712 Mount Curve in Minneapolis, just above 394. And so we first started talking about this. We bought this house 7 or 8 years ago, and I'm not unfamiliar with the fact we knew there was going to be sound and noise. There was when we bought the house. But the volume of the jake braking has seemingly increased over the past 5 years. So to the point, even after renovating my house and putting in triple glazed windows on the freeway side of the house, I'm still getting woken up in the morning, and I certainly can't sleep at all with my windows open in my house. There's absolutely no way that I can do that. And so that's one part of it, and I can sleep with windows closed in the house with central air. Then the other part of it is, it is a nice day, and I actually work at home. I can't really I can't really hold on a conversation on the phone. I'm about, I would guess, 300 feet or 300 to 500 feet from the actual freeway. So I have to keep closed windows if I get a phone call, because I've been on the phone with clients and they're like, what in the world was that? You know, or they can't hear what I'm saying on the phone. And the thing is that it's not a constant sound, it's just abrupt, in essence, downshifting or engine braking. So that it's startling. And I also have a golden retriever now who has started to have some issues around this. She's afraid of thunder, but she's now adapted. This is one of the things that came more frequently, so that she also appears next to me and she's shaking. So it's really kind of a quality of life issue, and if I'm hopeful that these signs would at least decrease the frequency, if not necessarily eliminate it. That may not be the case, but I'm hopeful that we can at least try this. So that's what I have to tell you.
Governor, you have an amendment?
There is an amendment that would, I believe, have the city pay for the signage, and I would appreciate if the committee would put that amendment on. I think that's the wishes of the department, and although I'm sure the city is not thrilled with that move, I do understand the department's position on this.
Well, Mr. Chair, as a Minneapolis member, I'll move the H2600A1.
Representative Hornstein moves Amendment A1. Do you want to explain the amendment, Representative Keller?
I think it just allows for the city to pay for the signage, and then we're going to take a stop in local government along the way here.
And that also negates the fiscal note.
Right.
Are there any questions from the committee on the amendment? Representative Severson? No? If not, all in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? Amendment A1 is adopted.
And, Representative Leader, if I could say one other thing before questions. I know that you're going to hear from the department that they have a concern that this actually increases the amount of noise that's being made. But I'm asking you that folks are kind of at their wit's end here in terms of the noise making, and they would prefer that we have a period here where we do this and let them be our judge about whether the noise is decreasing or not. This is an area on both sides of the highway that has been under monitoring for the last 20 years since the building of 394 for violation of noise standards. It often is over the standards. And so when Mr. Vining says he knew it was going to be noisy, he understands that. I have a similar feeling about that because I obviously chose to buy the house where I live, and the benefits outweigh that what becomes sort of a stream or river sound in the background of the highway. But I think it's this abrupt noise that is starting to cause a lot of havoc in people's lives. So I know you're going to hear that from the department about their concern of what the sign actually does do. But you obviously have seen them around other parts of the state where they do exist, where communities have had issues with this.
Are there questions from the committee?
Representative
Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is this what they call gate breaking, or what does that mean?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart, that's exactly what this is. But gate breaking is actually a trademarked company term, and that is why I believe there was maybe even a lawsuit a number of years ago where the signs used to say no jake breaking, and then the company I'm sure had their legal department and their public relations folks say we don't want our name on this sign, and so that's why the term engine breaking.
Is this in a car you used to be able to downshift to brake yourself on a hill? Is that what they're doing here or what? I don't understand what this problem is. And you maybe have a heck of a problem, but can you explain a little bit more?
Well, I think I'll let Ron.
I talked to Senator Dibble, who did a little work around this, who I think co-sponsored this.
Mm-hmm.
And so it actually is a mechanism that is hooked and uses the engine compression to slow the vehicle. So not only is it not just braking, it actually does brake the engine. And with that, it must generate, my understanding would probably be that it generates more pressure in the engine, and so it sounds like, somewhat like downshifting, and I think it probably happens simultaneously. but this is the way that they, you'll also hear probably someone testify that there's a safety issue, and they actually feel this helps them stop faster.
Yeah.
My assumption when they were saying safety was this concept of, because it's noisy, people kind of pay attention to them.
For this one,
usually when they're trying to bring attention around.
You got it.
In an emergency, would they be able to do this if they really had to stop the thing? My car will stop if I ship it in below 60 miles an hour. Stop in a hurry.
I can't tell you that.
Okay.
I can't tell you that.
Thank you.
Any further questions? It'll stop. Any further questions for committee? If not, any others? People want to testify for or against the bill? We are in a time limit too, and we appreciate consolidating your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Chairman Leader, my name is Sue Grove, and I work for the Minnesota DOT. I'm one of the assistant state traffic engineers, and I'm not here today to oppose this bill, but I do want to explain a little bit about MnDOT's policy, and just so that you know that this is would be setting a precedent for installing these signs in freeway situations. Currently, we have a policy that was developed in conjunction with the State Patrol years ago, and we do not allow these signs which read vehicle noise laws enforced on the interstate or on freeway systems, basically due to the fact that we feel that the freeway is the place where the majority of truckers are traveling, and signing an issue of spacing and finding space for the signs is also can be extremely tight. And we also think it's very difficult to enforce in a freeway situation, and in conjunction with the State Patrol, we just made the decision that we didn't think they were appropriate to be installed on freeways. So this legislation would change or be the first of this type of sign on a freeway. We have denied other cities' requests for these signs on freeways in the past, just so that you're aware of that. We do allow cities to install signs like this on conventional highways, and we ask them then to actually enforce the noise laws. And so oftentimes the communities will pass a resolution stating that they will enforce the sign for noise laws prior to us actually installing the signs. We believe that actually enforcing this on 394 would be challenging, and so just so that you're aware of that. Spacing is an issue on 394. You obviously know how complicated that interchange is with or section of freeway. But we did take a look out there, and we can find places to put the signs if we remove one route marker and install a sign on what we call a bridge railing. We can find the space, so the space for the sign won't be an issue. And I did mention the last time I testified that because it's a sign that would be installed on a bridge railing, it would be quite expensive because we have to actually use a snooper truck to go out there and get it installed and all that kind of stuff. So there is some ongoing issues with that. So it's good that the city has agreed to pay for this. And then in closing, we have had a couple other signs similar to this that have gone up, and there have been residents that have said that they felt, and this again is just a feeling, that the noise actually level went up. And why that is or not, you can take that however you'd like. But those situations were very specific. One was on 169 and one was on Trunk Highway 61, where the residents actually thought that the noise got louder. So, anybody have
questions from the committee? Not. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And actually, there's the fiscal note is zero.
Okay.
Any further testimony? If not, Representative Hornstein renews his motion that House File 2600, as amended, be recommended passed and referred to the local government committee. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary. House File 2600 passed and referred to the local government committee. Thank you. The next bill up is me.
Representative Earhart, would you want to take that? Because I think it's going to go in a hurry.
Which bill is it?
If I could testify from here, that'd be fine.
Representative Leader, we have House File 3868, which compressed natural gas, something or other?
I'd like to move House File 3868 be passed and referred to the general order. House File 3868 is just a correction that we had in the Transportation Finance Bill in determining the rate for the compressed natural gas gas is taxed at 5 cents, and this determines, or the 22 cents equivalent, its equivalency, the natural gas rate per 1,000 cubic feet to the gallon BTUs of gas. That's basically how it's figured, and it's just a correction in the computations that we had in the finance bill. That's it, Mr. Chair.
Okay, are there any questions or comments? Where is this going? Okay, the leader removes his motion that the bill be passed to the general register. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Same sign.
Thank you.
Sign
for the members of the committee, we have a large agenda, and I think most of them are here. Tomorrow we have a meeting, and maybe just give it to me again so I got it right. We come in the committee meeting, we will adjourn, and then come back in the evening. The policy committee is at 2:15, and the full finance committee is at 5:30. And we'll have a markup on the policy bill tomorrow or Thursday. Tomorrow night, starting tomorrow night after the finance committee. And then it'll be marked up or passed on Thursday. And we're hoping not to have a meeting on Friday. We have a lot of bills on the schedule, so that's why we're going to try to move them as fast as we can. We have to be out of here, not be out of here, but session starts at 5:30. So we want to leave a little bit, at least by 5:30.
Mr. Chair,
beg your pardon?
3 o'clock is at 5.
Okay.
Very public.
We're trying to accommodate that too. Next bill up is House File 3003 by Representative Breyer. Someone want to move the bill? Not the chair will move that House File 3003. I believe it's an amendment we held over for possible inclusion in the transportation policy bill. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? I guess we didn't need a vote. This is Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chair Leader. I'll just first present the bill. It's a very simple bill, and then we can deal with the amendment after that. This bill, I would say, created a lot of attention in my community and in my district. There's a great interest in commuter rail and light rail and trying to reduce the traffic on our roads. And so in fact, even before the bill was introduced, there was much conversation about trying to renew the conversation about Dan Patch, and people didn't know that there was this broad statute that prohibited the conversation. So essentially what this bill would do is allow us to once again talk about the possibility of commuter rail through Scott County, Rice County, and to Northfield. And I have here with me Judge Chetman, who could speak in more detail about the bill, and I'd like him to do that, and then we can look at the amendment.
Welcome to the committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Judd Shetland. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council, and I thank you for the opportunity to be here, as well as to Representative Bly for carrying this bill for the council. I think it's pretty straightforward. All we're trying to do is seek a repeal to a session law back in 2002 that would not allow the council to plan, study, do anything with preliminary engineering, final design, or anything for the Dan Patch commuter rail line. And the reason why we're here is because the council is under the process of putting together our transportation policy plan, which is a 30-year planning document that helps us figure out where the investments in transit and transitways should take place in the region. And all we're doing is looking to have that repealed so we can include that as one of the corridors. The council currently is studying 29 corridors throughout the region. We're not suggesting that we move forward and fund all of these. All we're doing is trying to see which ones basically have the mustard in order to be able to be viewed as a viable transit way. And I don't know if the Dan Patch commuter rail line would pass that test or not, but we think that we should have the opportunity to at least look at it as a possible transit way. I know Mr. Schreiber is here from the MTDB, which is the Metro Transit Ways Development Board. They support this bill as well. They're just interested in making sure that we've basically put all the options on the table. And if you have specific questions, I'd be happy to take them.
Representative Bryant, we have a delete all amendment. So I'll move the delete all amendment DE1. What do you want to explain with this amendment?
I did not bring the amendment forward, and I would defer to
Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You should move the amendment.
Yeah, I'd like to move the DE1 amendment, but I do have to make an oral amendment to that, and we're going to remove the word study from line 1.9, 1.15, and 1.21. The net result of this would allow for Met Council to do what they say they want to do, which is study and, if necessary, plan in their long-range planning for the Dan Patch, but it would still keep in place the prohibition of expending money for preliminary engineering, final design, or construction without coming back to the legislature first. This was a big issue in a number of communities stretching from Minneapolis all the way down through Lakeville, and at the kind of meeting in the middle, and that they could continue to study. They could study and plan in their long-range planning, but would still have to come back for expenditures.
Representative Blyer, for your witness, do you have questions or comments?
I don't have any objections to the amendment.
Any questions from the committee representative here?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I had an identical bill to this, letter for letter. I think it was identical, just different number, because I thought it was a good idea to remove the prohibition as well. I'm happy to stand aside and unless Representative Bly move ahead with this. I saw the DE amendment. I was concerned that studying was still on the prohibited list, so I thank Representative Holbert for taking studying and planning out of the prohibition, and I'm okay too with leaving the rest of it in the prohibited category at this time, but at least we can talk about it now without fear of going to jail. I would support the DE amendment and the bill.
Representative Weinstein?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll also support the bill as amended and appreciate Representative Holbert's compromise language. I guess the only concern I have is there a precedent? I mean, do we have other in statute prohibitions on engineering and design of other lines? Is it still somewhat exclusionary of the Dan Patch?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, this is kind of the exception to the norm, and I think that there was some pretty significant opposition to this. The track runs very close to people's homes through particular neighborhoods closer to the Minneapolis and Edina and St. Louis Park, and we're sensitive to that as well. I think I don't exactly know why they went with this entire prohibition, but I think allowing us to study and plan loosens it up enough to the point where Representative Beard said as well, we can basically let people know that it does exist without getting into trouble.
Representative Holbert.
Oh, and Mr. Chair, there also was a study in the late 90s that looked at various rail corridors and the costs associated with the upgrade, et cetera, and this corridor was deemed to be extremely expensive. And, of course, there's been, at least on our end of this line, further degradation of the line. I don't think there's been trains on it. I'm guessing almost 20 years. So, I mean, it's actually a track I'm very familiar with, was very close to it. But
You know, if they want to study it, fine, but when we have the county commissioner, Mike Turner, talking about, we've already been there, done this, we don't need to waste more money doing this, but if they want to, that council wants to take another look-see at it, whatever, but I'm certain that the result is going to be the same or similar, and that it's just so expensive.
Mr. Chairman, just to be clear, the line from Northfield to Bear Lake Industrial Park is actually in pretty good shape and is used extensively. In fact, up into south end of Lakeville a little ways. From Lakeville to Savage, it hasn't been used for some time. And from Savage down to Minneapolis, it is used quite heavily as well. I believe the Dakota County actually did the study, and I think Parsons Brinkhoff actually did the report, and I have one of my constituents is sending me a copy. We don't violate copyright rules, we could probably, well, there it is there already. We might be able to get that distributed to the members, because I think it's going to be fascinating reading.
Well, Mr. Chair, the report was done by MnDOT.
Oh, they did do it.
And I also have three-ring binders full, so if you'd like to come and pick that up, Representative Beard, and take it home for some exciting late night reading, I'd be happy to share it with you.
That's in your heart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would speak against the amendment and against the bill. Might as well do them both at the same time. There was a study done, which I have a copy of right here if anybody wants to read it. And it cost the state $472,093.50. And it was done in this period of time. And it recommended that this be not considered for anything at the present time on into the future. It said when you get the North Star rail line up and running and the Red Rock, which was in consideration at the time, when you get those running smoothly for a year or two, then come back and see what this thing would provide in the way of additional capacity for moving folks around. It said that, in fact, it's very expensive to try and develop this line. A lot of it is about 10 mile an hour freight line, and we're talking 50 mile an hour passenger trains, and it just wouldn't fit. So they said, do what you should do with what you got going already, and then come back and spend another $500, maybe it's gone up to $1 million on it and study it again. I just don't think it's, why don't you want to spend more money studying the damn thing when we already got 4 or 5 years ago studied it? Answer that for me, please.
I'd be happy to. Representative Earhart, Representative Leader, Cheerleader, that study that was done by MnDOT, I thought it was done in 1991. Maybe it was 1999.
2001.
But the study that they, what the council is looking at this as one of a variety of transitways in our transportation policy plan. This study that you did, which was $400,000+, is nowhere near the amount of time or the money that the council would put into that study. Like I said, we're looking at 29 corridors, and we've looked at all of them probably to a 10%, 15% level, and I don't think that cost the council more than maybe $200,000, and that is the council's purpose as the regional planning agency to take a look at this. And I'm not, I'm sensitive to Representative Holberg and Representative Earhart's concerns, but what we're considering here is nowhere, at least near what the study from 1999 or 2001 would say. And I know, Representative Earhart, you mentioned that after the North Star and after Red Rock, commuter rail lines were in up and operating. Well, this is a 30-year document. I mean, we're not suggesting that we turn around and start building the red or the damn patch line. I had to follow there. The damn patch line. Anytime in the near future, all we're asking for is to be able to look at it as a potential corridor. So, and the amendment that Representative Holberg has does not allow for preliminary engineering or any of those things that would require any cost. And somebody else at the Met Council will probably have to come back and ask for that 10, 15 years down the line.
Mr. Chairman, we are. The original grant from the state was $1 million to, who did it, went to MnDOT for the studies. And the $472,000 was spent on this corridor. And how are you coming with the Red Rock?
Mr. Shetland. You know, Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, Washington County did a very detailed study on Red Rock, and I'm sure they'd be happy to come in and explain, you know, what they were able to find on that. But we still have Red Rock listed in our transportation policy plan as a transit way that's hopefully viable here by the year 2030. And that's exactly, I mean, like I say, this is a 30-year plan. We're talking the year 2038 at the very end of it is when we envision that these transit ways would take place. And I can't tell you where Dan Patch would fit in there because we haven't been able to study it. I mean, we're not, again, we're not suggesting we're put any type of financial investment.
$172,000 worth of study right here.
Do you have further questions, Representative Hur? Not Representative Hornsky?
Thank you. Maybe one last comment before we move on. You know, I support this. I think it should be studied. But this committee is going to have a chance on Thursday to approve, I think, a very good option in this corridor as well, which is the bus rapid transit, which doesn't go as far south as Northfield, but does provide an option in this corridor from Lakeville to Minneapolis. And so, you know, that's, we'll see if that project can take up some of the ridership. You know, that's something that certainly can be studied. But this is an option, and this is something that Representative Holberg and I think worked on following this report because Dan Patch was off the table. So we'll have a chance on Thursday to get something done by the end of 2009. And so, I think that's just a perspective maybe for some members that haven't been following this. And again, we'll see what the ridership looks like. I think it's going to be robust. And but let's study this knowing we have at least an option.
Mr. Chairman, go ahead.
I
just want to make sure that before everybody says we should do a study and find out what the ridership is and find out another study to find out what this is, that they read the report, because that's all in here. So before you recommend that we do go over the same ground again,
I would
read the report.
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, I will be happy to make sure that the folks at the council read through that report, and so we don't have to duplicate things that were done whenever.
Can you raise your right hand, Thomas?
Hold your test
backwards. I'm serious, Mr. Chair.
Really,
I will make sure that they have a copy of that report, and I will make sure that we are not duplicating anything. All that I'm asking for is that we can basically suggest that this is a potential transit way. It may be the worst of the 29 we're looking at, but all I'm saying is that we would like to have the opportunity to go ahead and count it as one to be studied. Representative Leader, one last thing I'd like to say is, you know, Representative Hornstein mentions the UPA, which is the Urban Partnership Agreement, and that is a transit way that we're talking about that serves Lakeville to Minneapolis, and that is a living, breathing type of transit way that where there is going to be service, and we are expecting there to be tons of service and ridership on there, and we're really excited about that as well. Actually, I probably will be the one sitting here talking about it. But to Representative Earhart's concerns, we're not talking anything like we are the UPA with the dam patch. So if that, I don't think I'm going to be able to cure any of his concerns, but we're talking about two major different things.
Representative Brian, do you have a comment?
Yes.
If not, we should move the amendment. Yes. We would like to proceed.
I'll be brief. Representative Earhart, I have great respect for your ability to represent the interests of your district, and I want to assure you that I am trying to do the same in my district, and there is tremendous interest in some kind of commuter rail or transit from Northfield to the city. And so that's why I think this is an important thing to at least begin the conversation so we can hear some of those concerns as well.
Representative Holberg, do you want to renew your... Is there any further questions? Holberg renewed our motion at BE1. To delete all amendment, be recommended to pass or be adopted, right?
Oh, just the amendment.
The amendment.
The amendment that's amended.
No.
Wait a minute. We didn't move the amendment yet.
No, you had the amendment.
Oh, wait, will you? The oral amendment. I accepted that. I thought technical. That's
Mr. Chair, I think we have to vote on the A1 amendment as amended.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, D1,
the motion is to vote on the amendment as amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? The amendment is adopted. Now we have the bill before us. Any further questions or comments? Any further testimony by someone in the audience?
No.
If not, all in favor of House File 3003 as amended, be held over for possible inclusion in the transportation policy bill. We don't have to vote on that. So, thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Representative Morrow, the next bill.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'd like to move House File 3750. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, there is a DE1 amendment which I believe is being passed out right now. And as that goes around, I'd like to move the DE1 amendment.
Representative Morrow moves the DE amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? Amendment is moved.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have the bill in the condition I'd like to have it. This is, members, about hours of service, and the issue came to me concerning the movement of anhydrous ammonia. And I think for time's sake, Mr. Chair, I'll turn immediately to Mr. Clavin to explain the bill.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Bruce Clavin. I represent the Minnesota Association of Cooperatives today here. I want to thank Representative Morrow for picking this issue up. It came to us last year. And we have a member who's a constituent of Representative Morrow in Lafayette, Minnesota, who runs the co-op there. And so he was gracious enough to pick up the issue for us. Also want to thank Mr. Burris, who I talked to at 1:30 this afternoon about this delete all, and everybody is busy this week. And I want to thank him for seeing me and putting that together on such short notice. Members, the issue here is really very simple. And I know every time you say there's a simple little bill here, it's really not. This one actually is not all that simple, but the bill itself is. The issue is how many hours you can work in the fall as it relates to agriculture. For many years, the industry for moving anhydrous ammonia around operated under the exemption you see in the law for ag commodities and farm supplies. Farm supplies, of course, seed, feed, fertilizer, and so forth. In the fall, there's gotten to be over the years a lot of interest in putting fertilizer on in the fall. But everybody needs it at the same time. And so the wholesalers would take it from the terminals to the local co-ops all around the state. And it was clear that the co-ops delivering it to the farms were covered by the exemption. The federal government issued a clarification last spring saying the exemption only applies to the retail movement, not the wholesale. So what happened last fall is the local Lafayette co-op, for example, ran out at 2 o'clock in the afternoon one day when everybody wanted the stuff. The only thing we could do to try to rectify this was approach the governor's office. We were able to get in an executive order suspending this and allowing the folks to operate as they always had last fall. That was issued on October 31st. We promised the administration we would try to address this in the 08 session, and so here we are. Now, we know the patrol has concerns about this, and MnDOT as well, and the reason they have concerns is because this puts us out of compliance with the federal box. Federal government has a box. Things go in the box. It's very black and white. You don't take things in and out of the box. They stay there. So we're trying to clarify the federal rule and operate the way we always had before, which was wholesale and retail. The threat is the federal funding. And Minda, I don't know if they're coming up there. They maybe don't have to. But the threat then is the federal funding. Would the federal government potentially take away funding from our state if we monkey with the box? We have our president actually is in Washington this week, and she's talking with Representative Oberstar's office about trying to get a letter from the U.S. Secretary of Transportation not withholding federal funds. We don't have that yet. But that's the bill before you. It's a very simple issue, but I know there's a lot of concern from the patrolmen that side. It's just an effort we're trying to do for our members. Again, we promised the administration we would do that. There may be questions about it, but everybody needs the product at the same time, and we're not governed by the clock. We're governed by the weather.
Is this just peculiar to the northern part of the country?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if it's peculiar to that. The federal clarification would be for all states. We hear from people that there's various levels of enforcement in North Dakota and Nebraska versus here. So some members get caught here. The effort on that DE-1 was to try to narrow it down to just intrastate and just anhydrous. The original bill, if you actually looked at the original bill, it was all farm supplies all the time. So we tried to narrow it. I don't know if it gets the patrol there. We talked ahead of time. It probably does not. We don't know that for sure. We're waiting for some interpretation. There was a suggestion we put an effective date on here of 2009. That's a possibility we could consider. If it isn't adopted, we're likely to go back to the governor's office in October again if people start running out. So if you don't fix it, you know, we may end up doing that again. But we told them we'd try to do it here. We're still talking with the patrol, still talking with the feds. We're just not ready yet today.
Are there questions from the committee? If not, is it someone...
Mr. Chair, I believe that Captain Urquhart would like to talk to the bill.
Welcome to the committee, Captain.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ken Urquhart. I serve as the commander of the State Patrol's Commercial Vehicle Enforcement Unit. We've been discussing this issue with the industry folks, and the interesting position it puts us in is that, and Mr. Clavin touched on it, is that if we circumvent the federal regulations by changing the law as with this bill, it will put our MXAP funding at risk, and our MXAP funding is the Motor Carrier Safety Assistance Program. We receive a significant amount of money from the USDOT to promulgate truck and bus safety programs. And I interacted with my federal colleague on Monday. They're all in a meeting in Missouri, and I asked him to review the legislation. He got back to me and said, yeah, this is an issue that could put your funding at risk. As far as the issue of the executive orders, from time to time, the industry asks for those executive orders to operate and move the commodity to the dealers. And just so everybody understands, if the real issue here isn't from the dealer to the farmer. The issue of this transportation is from the distribution center to the dealer. And the federal government looks at this as that this does not comply with their farm exemption in their regulations. They do exempt the move from the dealer to the farmer. That complies with their exemption. So there's a number of things here that have to be dealt with, and it does concern us that we'll fall out of compliance with their regulations and may suffer a setback in our safety program.
Any questions of Captain Urquhart? Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Captain, what's the tune of that federal funding?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, Representative Severson. It's a formula grant. It's annual, and it's an 80-20 grant. We are under a maintenance of effort, and then we provide 20% match, and the federal government provides 80% to a tune of just less than $4 million.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, Representative Severson, the reason I've suggested that we lay this bill over is we'd like to wait until the end of the week to see what the federal government tells us about the exemption, because it may be that we have to go back to the executive order process. I'm not seeking to jeopardize that funding, but rather I needed to have the hearing in time, but I do want to lay it over in order to await word, as Mr. Clinton said, from the Fed.
Representative Ruth, did you have a question?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was answered.
Any further questions? Any further testimony?
Just one other item, Mr. Chairman. To support Representative Morrow's comment, I spoke with my colleague from the USDOT, and they are waiting for an official interpretation to clarify this. So, you know, the thing is in the hopper, so to speak, and we hope that they come up with an interpretation we can all live with.
You actually don't have a time frame on that, so.
Mr. Chairman, no, I do not.
Representative Morrow, your intention was just lay the bill on the table temporarily?
If I might, Mr. Chair, and I too will be contacting Congressman Oberstar's office to find out if I can find out before the end of the week where we stand.
Any further questions?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Horn.
Just a timing concern on that. If we're marking up the bill Wednesday night and Thursday, is it your intention, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Morrow, to still have this included in the omnibus transportation policy bill?
Representative Morrow.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hornstein, my hope is to have some clarification from the federal government before that. If we don't, then I'll certainly reassess, but as I said to Representative Peterson, I do not wish to take action that would jeopardize the federal funding.
Okay. Thank you.
I presume, Representative Hornstein, if it's included, we could delete it, too.
Okay.
That's
right. Might be a strategy as well.
Right. Any further questions? If not, we'll lay this bill over. Thank you for the testimony. See, Representative Morrow, you're back again.
I am, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, this is House File 3805. And, Mr. Chair and members, there is also an A1 amendment that I would like to move.
Representative Morrow moves it. A1 amendment? You all have it in your package.
And Mr. Chair and members, this amendment is and the language itself came from Mindot. You'll see that Ms. Parker joined me up.
Representative Morrow, we have to vote on your doubt.
Yes, sir.
And all in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary. Amendment is adopted.
And then, Mr. Chair and members, you'll also see there's a handwritten amendment. This bill has been a work in progress, and one of the things that came up, members, as we get the bill in shape, came from some of the ag groups, and it concerned something called drag lines. Drag lines would allow, in essence, to have less weight on bridges in order to move manure that would otherwise have to move across the bridge. What this amendment would do, and I thank Mr. Burris for his help on this, is to direct the Department of Transportation to investigate and recommend what's called opportunities for infrastructure adaptation to accommodate the implementation of manure application technology to lessen impacts on roads and bridges. This is, in essence, it's a conduit, if you will, along a bridge that would allow the pumping of manure from one end of the bridge to the other.
This is a separate amendment.
This is a separate amendment, Mr. Chair.
You don't have a number.
We don't, Mr. Chair, and I apologize. This would
move the handwritten amendment.
I would move the handwritten amendment, Mr. Chair.
Representative Moore moves the handwritten amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The bill is in the shape that I would like it to be in. This member, this bill deals with what's known as implements of husbandry. I understand predating my time in the legislature, there's been quite a long discussion among county engineers, MnDOT, and various farm organizations about the movement of implements of husbandry and weight. And I think at this point it would probably be quickest for me to turn to Ms. Parker, who was a part of those conversations that led to this compromise measure.
Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Betsy Parker from MnDOT. Representative Monroe is correct. This discussion has been going on for at least 4 years, every session. And the issue has to do with the weight of farm implements crossing Minnesota bridges. At the present time, they are exempt from any restrictions on crossing Minnesota bridges, even if the bridge is posted at a lower weight than the implement is. And recently, the USDOT has told us that we must do something about that law in Minnesota, or they will require Minnesota to post the weight permitted on every bridge in the state, which is about 12,000 to 13,000 bridges. And so that would be quite a significant expense for Minnesota. And it also, we've been having an ongoing discussion about farm implements because they continue to get larger and heavier all the time. And there's nothing we can do about roads that are already in existence and bridges to enable them to carry heavier and larger implements. So this discussion is probably designed with two purposes in mind. One is to restrict the weight on posted bridges in order to protect them, and also to begin a more probably complex discussion with the farm implement industry, the manufacturers and dealers and the farmers, about where this is going in the future. And so we have been very strongly encouraged by the USDOT as recently as February to make sure that this was taken up in this session of the legislature. The Office of the Inspector General for the USDOT has directed their regional office to do an audit of Minnesota's compliance with federal bridge regulations. We are not in compliance right now. And because of our failure to require farm implements to obey posted bridge limits, and since the collapse of the 35W bridge, there's been increased scrutiny focused on Minnesota. And if we do not do something this session, then I think we can expect the federal government to do an audit, not only of Minnesota's compliance with these requirements, but with the compliance of the Minnesota Division of the Federal Highway Administration and their failure to enforce this against us so far. So, actually, fortunately, this year we were able to find a solution that seems to make the feds happy. As far as I know, there is no agricultural group that opposes it. Several people have told me they support it. The Department of Agriculture is comfortable with this approach. When we originally proposed this several years ago, we promised the Department of Agriculture that we would not bring any proposal forward until it had their support. And this proposal does have their support. It has probably, it looks like a lot of words, but it has two main provisions. One says that farm implements cannot cross a posted bridge with a weight heavier than that permitted by the sign. And the other one, which would not take effect until December 31st of 2009, would say that they must comply with the weight on legal bridges, which is the bridges that are all not posted but can carry 80,000 pounds, which is the legal limit in the state for most bridges. And then most of the rest of the bill is just collecting together in one section all of the existing regulations that govern farm implements in the state. And Gene Halverson from our Office of Freight and Commercial Motor Vehicles is here. He can answer any detailed questions you might have about the effect of the law.
Are there any questions from the committee? Mr. Halverson or
Mr. Chair, if I might, Mr. Chair, there is a representative of the county engineer from Aiken County who is here. I'm here to testify.
I think I'm just going to check with bad questions from Mr. Halverson.
No.
Apparently, we don't have any questions, Mr. Halverson, which saves you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. As Representative Morrow said, my name is John Welly. I'm Aiken County engineer. I represent a task force of the county engineers that have been working with MnDOT on this issue to bring some resolution to the unregulated weight of implements of husbandry on our bridges. We're very concerned with the weight of these implements, not only the gross vehicle weight, but the single axle weight, the tandem axle weight. They are well in excess of requirements of other commercial vehicles on our bridges, and our bridges just are not designed to handle the load that these implements are capable of putting on our roads and our highways. This really is an issue that involves our roads and our bridges, because my counterparts in the agricultural parts of the state tell me stories of the damage they see on their paved roads and on their gravel surface roads from these implements of husbandry. There's a study underway at the mineral facility right now that's trying to quantify that damage relative to pavements, and we've agreed to put that on hold for now, pending the outcome of that study. But we would like to proceed, as Betsy Parker stated, with getting some restrictions on bridges, because we just feel that there's a disaster out there waiting to happen. When you're talking about single axle grain carts that are capable of putting 25 tons and 35 tons per axle on a bridge, as opposed to a 10 ton commercial vehicle limit, when you're talking about tandem axles on manure tankers or grain carts that are capable of putting up to 35 tons on both of those axles in a very short distance on a bridge, compared with 14 tons that commercial vehicles are limited to. Those loadings just create stresses on our bridges that they just clearly were not designed to handle. And particularly on our local bridge system, it's an issue with MnDOT bridges and our local bridges. It's arguably a bigger issue on our local bridges because our bridges are generally older and not designed as strong. They're generally made of the type of materials that are more susceptible to these heavy loads, namely timber and steel. So we'd just like to see that that there gets to be some resolution to this, so we don't have to post our bridges. We've basically been made aware of the fact that if we continue to allow these unregulated loads, we're going to have to do some level of posting, and that's just not something that the county engineers want to have to do, is go out and post every bridge or at least a very significant number of them for these implements. We're supportive of this bill. The county engineers are supportive. The Association of Minnesota Counties is supportive of the bill.
This actually doesn't address farm implements, just commercial vehicles, is it? Is it Representative Law? Because I know the farm implements, the grain carts, and those are the corn carts, whatever they call them. I know they've had big tires, and I know we've had some questions about it before.
This bill is specific, Mr. Chair, to implements of husbandry, particularly towed implements of husbandry, I believe.
Okay, I was thinking of commercial vehicles that somebody said. Okay.
And Mr. Chair, we do have representatives of different agricultural groups that can tell the committee that I understand this bill to be a compromise reasonable measure that the agricultural groups have accepted.
So unless, are there questions from the committee? Representative.
Okay. All right, Mr. Chair. I just have a question. Where are they going to go? If right now they're crossing the bridges and they're, how are they going to get to their location? I mean, we're saying now that they cannot use the bridges to cross. We're prohibiting them from doing that. So how are they going to get to their location? Are you going to come back and ask for waivers on bridges, or I don't quite understand what we're trying to do here.
Mr. Whalen.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the egg industry has told us that the industry is undergoing a transition as we speak, and there certainly still are these implements on the roadway, but the industry is undergoing a transition whereby these implements will be utilized more in the field and not on the roads. It's becoming more economical, I'm told, by these, and there's people here in the audience that can probably speak better to this. But we're told that, again, the industry is making the transition to actually loading the grain or the manure into commercial vehicles for the longer haul on the public roads and the public bridges, transporting that manure or grain into these implements of husbandry once they get into the field, or vice versa in the case of the grain cart.
Further questions? John, is anyone else to testify for or against in the audience? If not, this one's being held over, Representative Morrow.
That's my understanding.
It's being inserted in the
committee. Yes, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I think I know some members may have to leave, but we if we don't get the bill out, we may not get it. And I understand that the testifiers have agreed to kind of consolidate the things, their testimony. Representative Earhart moves his House File 3833 for possible inclusion in the
Transportation Omnibus Policy Bill. Representative Earhart. Got a lot of testifiers. Do you want to give us a quick summary?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members. This is a similar bill to what is already included in the Transportation Policy Omnibus Bill. It had Earhart, Leader, Hortman, Severson, and Nelson on it last year. It's in there, but this is an updated version. 3833 has a few more things that were adjusted with. But what it does is make quite a few changes in the motor carrier laws with two basic effects here. It's for household goods mover. Carrier regulation, it modifies regulations by shifting from a permit system to a system of registration, and two, it removes obsolete language on other types of permits that are no longer issued by the Minnesota Department of Transportation. And I would like to have Mr. McGraw explain the bill from there on, if I may.
Mr. McGrath.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And my name is Lee McGrath. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Chapter of the Institute for Justice, which is a free market public interest law firm that lobbies in favor of economic opportunities. I thank the committee for the opportunity to testify in favor of House File 3833. I also thank Representatives Earhart and Leader for authoring this legislation. Representative Earhart mentioned it, but it is worthy of thanking Representative Hortman, Severson, Nelson, Hornstein, and Slocum for co-authoring very similar legislation that passed the House last year but did not get a hearing in the Senate. This bill is not a deregulation bill. Instead, it brings up to date Minnesota's regulation of in-state household goods movers, just as the legislature has done for every other mode of transportation in years past. The bill does this by adopting regulations in two areas. First, federal consumer protection, and second, the same means that the feds use for registration of new entrants who want to get into the household goods moving industry in Minnesota. In the area of consumer protection, the bill requires moving companies to do three straightforward things. One, to give a consumer a written bid. Two, to release the goods at the point of destination upon payment. And three, it establishes an arbitration process to settle disputes in an orderly way as opposed to in the driveway. This is common sense consumer protection. There could have been a lot of other additional federal regulations that we could have included in this bill, but chose not to balance out some of the concerns of the industry. Moving on to the second focus of the bill, which is pro-competition, the bill eliminates an antiquated protest process and other anti-competitive regulations in the area of geographic restrictions and the filing of fixed rates. In place of the protest process, the bill establishes a simple registration process, just as the feds use, requiring all new entrants to complete an application and to show proof of insurance to MnDOT. This is the same exact process that new entrants use for every other mode of transportation in Minnesota. Importantly, this legislation ends the power of market incumbents to block new entries by new entrants and new competitors. To the industry's credit, however, it is worth noting that under its new leadership, the power to block new competitors has not been used for 3 years. As such, this legislation not only adopts federal standards for entrants, it also adopts the current industry practice for letting new entrants into the field. I'd be happy to, I'm here with a mover who has been in the past denied, had his application denied. I'm also here with a professor from the University of Minnesota's School of Transportation Management, but I'm happy to answer any of the committee members' questions at this time about the bill.
Representative Earhart, how do you want to handle this before we get any questions? Are you assuming all your testifiers are going to testify?
Well, it's not necessary if we don't have questions that any of I can't answer. So,
any questions from the committee? Representative Medor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you know who passed out this, where this sheet is from? Who compiled it? It says on the top, postal good carrier's fact sheet.
That is not my work, Mr. Chairman, Representative Board, that is not my work. That is not the work of the proponents.
It's from the MTSA in the back. It says MTSA in the back.
Oh.
Yeah. Are there any questions of Representative Kalin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Earhart, I think this, or for either you as a testifier, the current filing registration fee is $150, is that correct?
Mr. McGrath?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kalin, that is correct.
And we're proposing, Mr. Chair and Mr. McGrath, under the bill that I support, I think it's a good bill. I'm just want to make sure that I understand that we're now going to be increasing that fee to $200.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Kalin, that is Representative Kalin, that is correct. There are some other fees that no longer will be paid by industry participants, an annual vehicle fee, and so net, this is it reduces a lot of paperwork. And it reduces annual fees, but you're absolutely correct, Representative Kalin. The initial fee is $50 higher.
And Representative Kalin.
And thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. McGrath. The fees go into the Trunk Highway Fund.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, that is correct.
And Mr. Chair, and Mr. McGrath, that. I'm sorry to ask a series of questions, but I tried to quickly look through the bill and wasn't able to glean the summary, the data from the summary that those paying all these fees, will they be paying about the same in the fund and have the other fees the bill is removing, with those also going into the Trunk Highway Fund?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, I do not believe they were going into the Trunk Highway. Those other annual fees were not going into the Trunk Highway Fund. I believe they were offsetting some of the expenses associated with the annual management of expenses at MnDOT.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. McGrath.
Any further questions? If not, perhaps we should take Mr. Marcus first, so we have two sides of the issue. Is Mr. Marcus here?
No.
Representative Hornstein?
Mr. Chair, I appreciate Representative Kalin catching this subdivision 4, line 3-5. Does that mean that it becomes technically a finance bill rather than a policy bill because of this fee increase? And would the motion be to send it to the, for us to approve it and send it to the floor rather than omnibus policy bill?
Mr. Burris, can you comment on that? actually, Rep. Nero, I don't think there was a fiscal note, was there? I didn't. Was there? Fiscal note. I think that. Is that a trade-off, Representative?
I do not know, Mr. Chairman. If it makes any difference, I'll make an oral amendment and make that 115 the same as it was. If that solves the problem, Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me, just a minute. Ms. Stewart, you ready?
Mr. Chair, members, the fiscal note has been requested on this, but it is it hasn't been completed yet.
Ms. Stewart, does it appear... looking that there be a major fiscal note or not? If this is your impression, I know you can't say yes or no, but basically, I mean.
Mr. Chair, members, I would defer to the department on that. I'm not quite sure.
Okay. Would you could you answer that question only? Would you want to come up? Would you identify yourself, please?
My name is Warren Briggs, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm from MnDOT, from the Commercial Vehicle Operations Office, and a fiscal note has been requested on this. What this really does is reduce the initial, or increase the initial registration fee from $150 to $200. That's a one-time fee. It also removes the $40 per year per vehicle fee. Or 75. Yeah.
So it's a reduction in a sense?
It would be, an overall reduction in fees over the long haul. That's true. It's an initial increase and an over the long term reduction.
Actually, everyone would have that 75 reduction basically if they apply for a permit. Okay, thank
that's
you.
Great.
Mr. I forgot. Marcus, could we have your testimony, please?
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Howard Marcus, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Transport Services Association. We're the State Association of Household Goods Carriers. I've worked as a transportation consultant with motor carriers in Minnesota for over 30 years, including household goods carriers. I am strongly opposed to House File 3833, as is the members of my association. This bill is really a solution in search of a problem. Our current system in Minnesota serves consumers well and ensures that carriers are playing by the same rules. The evidence that our system works is found in the remarkable lack of complaints in the household goods industry, carrier industry in Minnesota. MnDOT, which currently oversees our industry, has had only a handful, and I mean a very small handful, of complaints about household goods carriers over the past 5 years. House File 3833 treats our unique carrier industry as if it were an ordinary freight carriers. There are fundamental differences between freight carriers who presently have a registration system for new entrants and household goods carriers who operate under the current permit system. Freight carriers operate by moving commercial commodities between companies. Household goods carriers operate primarily by moving personal belongings for individuals from one dwelling to another. A household goods move can be a very intense emotional experience dealing with a person's most prized possessions. People who have had their belongings placed into someone else's truck are in an extremely vulnerable position. The ability for the consumer to bargain, which occurs under normal circumstances, is out the window. Consumers are put into a take-it-or-leave-it position. Under our existing statutes, almost anyone who wants to get into the industry can do so. Our current system requires carriers to apply for a permit from MnDOT. Today's applicants would be denied if they fail to comply with the regulations concerning safety, insurance, tariffs, and vehicle registration. MnDOT can also deny permits if they are aware that the applicant had a criminal background that might jeopardize public safety, or if an applicant had insufficient assets, which also deal with safety. Under the proposed bill, no one from MnDOT, or any government agency for that matter, would screen applicants to ensure that they are fit and able to perform the services. This bill removes MnDOT's strong permit system and replaces it with a registration system. Under the new registration system, an applicant really has to provide a USDOT number, which anyone can obtain through the internet, demonstrate they are bonded, have insurance, and show they have an arbitration policy at the time of the application. Our industry is very concerned about the arbitration requirement. Arbitration programs are very expensive, and the burden of expense would fall on the small mom-and-pop operations that are struggling to survive. For someone to set up an arbitration system, change their paperwork and the like could cost them in the realms of thousands of dollars. I am concerned that the additional cost would force legal, law-abiding carriers out of business or to operate outside the rules. Moreover, the consumer would also incur additional costs under an arbitration system, which usually requires the consumer to pay a filing fee and both parties share the cost of an arbitrator's services. I also question how a mandatory arbitration system would work under this bill, as it lacks provisions for a written bill of lading that would contain the documentation necessary for an arbitration to occur. Arbitration is really the cornerstone of this proposed bill. for consumer protection. And arbitration has always been and should continue to be more of a last-ditch effort to get things settled than the basic ingredient. Moreover, I'm concerned about the general lack of consumer protection in House File 3833. Under the current system, carriers operate under a filed rate doctrine, which requires them to file their rates with MnDOT and stick to those rates. MnDOT is prohibited from accepting rates that are unjust, unreasonable, or discriminatory. The filing of rates by carriers also prevents collusion within the industry. The proposed bill eliminates the requirement to file rates with the state or to stick with the rates they quote consumers. The bill proposes binding and non-binding estimates but does not require a sufficient writing to ensure these estimates are solid. Moreover, the bill allows carriers to charge consumers an extra 15% for impractical operations. This bill also eliminates cab cards. The requirement that carriers annually register their vehicles with MnDOT and pay a $75 per vehicle fee. Cab cards are there to tell MnDOT where the businesses are operating and where the trucks can be found. If cab cards are eliminated, not only will the state lose out on revenue, it will make it almost impossible to track down carriers in the event of theft or a safety problem. In conclusion, I ask you to oppose House File 3833. The current system protects consumers, ensures safe and ethical business practices, and works well based on the lack of complaints against our industry. Other states like Florida have moved to a deregulated system, and consumers have paid the price. There are many instances of theft, fraud, and consumers being held hostage by unscrupulous operators. These states are trying to go back to a regulated system. Minnesota's household goods carriers regulations are a model system in the United States. Please keep our system strong. I thank you.
Are there questions from the members? Yeah. Representative Magnus.
Mr. Chairman, is this bill had a hearing in the Senate?
Representative Earhart, you know what? Did it had a hearing in the Senate?
I do not know that. I know that the author
Thursday will come up.
Coming up Thursday, you see.
It has, you see?
It will be on Thursday.
Oh, sir. I think at this point, if we could just call Mr. Briggs in, and I'd just like to ask, the committee may ask some questions about the pros and cons. I think we heard one side of each. If we get another testifier, we're going to have to make certain I get more balance again. I presume you're a neutral. I know you have to take a neutral position, Mr. Briggs, but all the testimony on both sides, if you have any comment as far as maybe elaborating on one issue or the other?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we had the pleasure of working with both sides over the past summer, and our goal was to come up with a bill that everybody could live with, and we didn't quite get there. We agreed to disagree with a little bit on both sides from the department standpoint. We appreciate the effort to deregulate household goods, to get rid of basically an old regulatory system that we've already gotten rid of as far as motor carriers go in Minnesota. Passenger carriers, freight carriers, they all used to be regulated this way. This is sort of the last vestige of this kind of regulation. And MnDOT, in fact, Ms. Parker and I worked on a bill probably 10 or 12 years ago to do just exactly this. So we're sympathetic with the idea of getting rid of the deregulation. The trouble is, I also agree with what Mr. Marcus said about the unique nature of this industry. We don't have a lot of complaints. I checked, and in the past 5 years, we've had 8 complaints that are consumer-related. And this industry has done a real good job of policing itself, basically. But it's a very touchy thing when you have your personal belongings that are being moved, and you maybe have something. I've got an old RCA Victrola that was given to my father when he was 12 years old, and most of you probably wouldn't give me $50 for it, but it's one of the most valuable things I have. If that's destroyed, you know, during a move, that's a big thing to me. And so that's the kind of emotional attachment that people have to household goods, and why this is such a tough bill to get done. So our bottom line was, in the department, we thought that one area where the bill is lacking is in documenting the actual agreement between the parties. At the federal level, household goods movers comply with, I think it's 47 or 48 provisions that relate to consumer protection. This bill pulls in 7 or 8, I think. and we'd prefer to see about at least three or four more. One having to do with movers having to have a complaint procedure and telling that to the people that they're moving. And three others have to do with writing requirements, one of which Mr. Marcus mentioned, the bill of lading. We think right now it would be very difficult for an arbitrator or anybody to come in after the fact and identify exactly what the agreement was between the parties. So we'd like to see a bill of lading. We'd like to see an inventory, which is typically done now when a mover comes to actually move the goods. They make a note of the boxes and they number them and they make a note that there's X number of chairs or beds or whatever it is, so that nobody, when the truck gets to the other end, disagrees on what was loaded on the truck or not. And so, and the other one is an order for service. So there's three written documents that I think would really help to substantiate what's going on in each one of these moves.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And having been in the military and moved in many times, this is a very personal issue. And I agree that some of the documentation that we've been talking about here are absolutely essential to... It's not like moving cattle. I mean, you've got household goods that arrive on the other end and they look a lot different than when they left. And that becomes, you know, kind of a traumatic issue. So I agree with the regulation issues. I'm kind of leaning towards keeping what we've got here until we can come to some kind of compromise. I would speak in opposition to this bill.
Representative Horsky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think philosophically, I think the bill raises some important points, but I guess a couple of things that have surfaced in this hearing caused me concern. One is the lack of a complaint procedure. I think that's really critical, consumer protection. And then, and just, Mr. Briggs, I want to be clear that in the end, we're looking at an actual hit to the Trunk Highway Fund. I just want to be clear on that. That's also a concern to me.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, I think we are probably looking at a hit to the Trunk Highway Fund, but it's going to be very negligible. We've started working on the fiscal note, and I know we did one for the bill last year, and we concluded at that time that it would be negligible. We're probably talking about 170 or 200 moving companies and operating a couple of hundred trucks, or, you know, something like that. So we're really not talking about a great deal of money here.
Well, Mr. Chair, that is a concern, but this lack of a complaint procedure is problematic, I think.
Representative Ruth, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I would just have to echo what's being said, and I guess I still question as to, Mr. Chair, why we have brought this forward, Representative Earhart, because we've heard from testimony that arbitration would be more expensive. We don't really have it doesn't seem like we have a problem. Like I think Mr. Marcus said it right when he said it's a solution looking for a problem. So I think we're looking to open up for competition, and competition is always, that's good. But in light of all the other issues that were mentioned, I really oppose the bill. So I would hope that we would not pass this forward, Mr. Chair.
One follow-up, Mr. Chair, and I'm wondering, is there anything that precludes any other carrier from coming into the state and participating in our moving process currently?
Well, my understanding is that there is a way that the rest of the carriers now in the business can prevent that. There is a way that this is a fence industry. The people that are already working can fence out anybody else. That's the bottom line on this. And MnDOT will agree with that.
Any further questions?
Well, just to follow up on that, Mr. Chair. So then, are the costs for moving in our state proportionally higher than any other state?
If I could just interrupt. If we're going to have testimony for, I'm going to have a balance, and that's my problem.
Representative Severson, Minnesota, Lee McGrath, Institute for Justice. Minnesota has the highest, according to the largest franchiser of household goods movers in the country, Minnesota has the highest rate of household goods in the country. This is the most expensive place to move household goods.
Thank you. Marcus, you want to comment or not?
Yeah.
Not represent
Chair Iguano. Representative Earhart, in the meantime. Okay.
My name is Dave Bailey. I operate, own and operate a two-man and a truck franchise in the Twin Cities and have done so for 9 years. One of the reasons that Minnesota has no complaints and has so few complaints is because of the MTSA. Every mover in Minnesota really does a tremendous job. We don't find it to be any more expensive. What we do have here is a higher labor rate in the state of Minnesota. If you take what I charge to move per hour and put it against what somebody charges in the state of Georgia per hour, and you take my labor rate and you even things out and you weigh it out, we're not making any more money than they are in the state of Georgia. But we are paying a higher labor rate there. We are providing health insurance for our employees. They are making more money for common labor. These are good jobs for men who have no other skill. So we don't apologize for the rate. The people behind this, they're talking about me. Two Men in a Truck International is really behind the change in these regulations. We just strongly disagree. What they're going to do is replace Minnesota's rules with Florida. I just got back from Florida.
If I could interrupt, yeah. I want to keep a balance thing. I thank you for your testimony to the question. Representative Earhart, what do you want to do with the bill? The disposition, we should be...
Mr. Chairman, where does this bill go from here? Into the omnibus?
It should be considered in the omnibus policy bill, but I think Representative Hornstein's got some questions or concerns.
When is that coming up, Mr. Chairman? Is that tomorrow night or?
That's tomorrow.
I think there'll be some work on it tomorrow night and some work on it Thursday, and we'll vote on it Thursday, is my understanding.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't know if there's any time for them to smooth out the differences. It doesn't sound to me like the fellow from MnDOT thought there was very much differences to make this pretty sound bill. He was talking about serious weather inclusion, so if there's time to work those out before we get to the...
The question I have, would you want to try to work it out, or do you want to take a vote from the committee right now?
Well, let's try and work it out. I mean,
we can temporarily
lay it over.
I don't know if you want to bring testifiers back tomorrow. I don't know if we're going to have that time committee. That committee time tomorrow, Representative Earhart. We have really got a full agenda, so maybe if you can work it out with them, and we can take a look tomorrow with Representative Weinstein. Okay.
Okay.
Not them, but then we have meeting tomorrow. Tomorrow the subcommittee meets at 2:15 and the full committee meets at 5:30. The meeting's adjourned.